This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Peter Clote, and here's what's coming up.
It will put a lot of pressure on the army, on the staff, the Ebrahans, to respond the same way. Otherwise, they will be viewed as the obstacles to ending the war and to peace in Sudan.
That's Salman Mohamed Salman, president of the University of Khartoum Council, on hopes that shuttle diplomacy can help bring about an end to the conflict between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Also, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is headed to the Middle East to help foster an end to the Israel-Hamas conflict. And Cameroon's divided opposition is being asked to agree on a single candidate for the 2025 presidential election. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Hundreds of people attended the funeral in Beirut today of Hamas number 2 Saleh al-Aruri, who was killed in a Lebanon strike blamed on Israel. Mourners urged Hamas to avenge his death and the deaths of 5 other leaders of the militant group. Israel today continued its offensive of southern and central Gaza, warning civilians to avoid traveling on a major road connecting the north and the south. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says more than 22,000 Palestinians have died in the Israel offensive, which began after Hamas militants from Gaza attacked Israeli communities on October 7th, killing about 1,200 people. Hamas and allied militants also took about 240 people hostage. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is heading to the Middle East this week amid intense diplomatic efforts to facilitate the delivery of humanitarian aid into the war-ravaged Gaza Strip and increasing international pressure on Israel to reduce civilian casualties among Palestinians. Blinken's visit would come as Israel's war with Hamas militants approaches its 3-month mark. For more on Blinken's trip, I have VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain on the line. Hello, Cindy.
Hello, Peter. Nice to be with you.
Same here, Cindy. So let's talk about the backdrop of this trip. Where do things stand in the Middle East at the moment?
Yes. Well, Peter, as you very well outlined, the tensions are heightened. We have the targeted killing of the Hamas deputy leader in a Hezbollah neighborhood in Beirut, Lebanon, as you say, which has really heightened tensions between Iran-backed groups such as Hezbollah and Israel. Israel says that its troops there at the border in northern Israel with southern Lebanon are on high alert. And the State Department says, the whole time it has been very concerned about the possibility of this Israel-Hamas war widening into a regional conflict, and that it is very concerned now at the moment. And that is the backdrop of Secretary Blinken heading to the region for the fourth time since the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel.
Well, Cindy, Secretary Blinken has made several trips to the Middle East since October. How effective do you think the U.S. diplomacy has been in influencing the war?
Yes, well, that's a very good question. And, of course, some young people in the U.S. and around the world have been protesting U.S. support for Israel, calling on President Biden to do more, to use more influence, and to even to stop providing weapons to Israel because of the deaths that we're all seeing of so many Palestinian civilians. The State Department, for its part, would argue that President Biden and Secretary Blinken have had an impact. They say, in the very first trip right after this attack, that there was so much rage by the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and shock after this barbaric attack, and that the U.S. and other countries really used their influence to get the Israeli war cabinet to allow aid into the Palestinians, and that on subsequent visits, the U.S. Pushed for these pauses that we saw in the fighting, which allowed for the release of at least some of the hostages. And now, on this visit, I believe that, number one aim may be try to calm tensions and to prevent a widening of the war, and number two would be to ask Israel to shift to a more targeted phase of the conflict where there will not be, we won't see the deaths of so many civilian Palestinians.
Well, Cindy, what do we know about where else Blinken will go and which regional leaders he may speak with?
Right. As we're speaking now, caution, we've not had an official announcement, but the Turkish foreign minister has said that Blinken is expected to visit his country, Turkey, on Saturday. And we are hearing that from local media sources, again, in Greece, that he may visit Greece. And we're expected that, as on the other trips, that he will likely visit Israel and perhaps also the West Bank, as in previous trips, and Jordan, key countries there.
Thank you very much, Cindy. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
The key players in shuttle diplomacy aimed at ending the conflict between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces are hoping to build on a deal reached with one side. The Coordination of Civilian Democratic Forces, known as TOCADEM, signed the Addis Ababa Declaration with the RSF on Tuesday, then met with the chairman of the regional body, IGAD, in Djibouti, and renewed its call for the army to join peace talks. VOA's Nabil Biyaju spoke with Salma Mohamed Salman, president of the University of Khartoum Council and an RSF expert, for analysis.
Now, the civilians have one voice, and it's a strong voice. So I think that by itself is a major development, and it's a positive development. In addition, what the declaration concentrated on is the same things that we had in the IGAD statement and whatever all the other meetings. It's an emphasis of the need for an immediate ceasefire and the return of the displaced people to their homes and evacuation of those, vacating those homes from whoever is occupying them, and then helping with the humanitarian assistance to those people, and talking about the international, regional, national supervision of this process of return of the displaced people. I think it's a positive step that they are getting together. It will put a lot of pressure on the army, on the SAF, the Hebron's, to respond same way. Otherwise, they will be viewed as the obstacles to ending the war and to peace in Sudan.
Yes, and we must note that the army or General Burhan has not publicly responded to this declaration yet. But Taqaddum, like you mentioned, is a broad civilian coalition, is being touted as the largest since this war. What is the best we can hope they will achieve, and what do you think of their composition?
I think, as I said, I see it as a very positive step. Now, at least there is one voice and there is someone with credibility who can talk to all the players and the international players, and who really has a wide group of parties and individuals behind him. The international community will be more willing to listen to them now that they are talking with one voice rather than listening to this and someone come with an opposing idea and this comes with a third idea. That's a major, major positive development. As you correctly noted, Burhan has not yet responded. It has been quite a while. We had thought that he would respond immediately, but it just shows that there are internal divisions and internal problems within the SAF and the Islamic allies. Those internal challenges and internal differences between the Islamists and the army. But again, as I said, it really puts them in a very odd place, in a very odd situation. There are two groups, the civilians and the MIT, are declaring a need for immediate ceasefire and return to normalcy, and then they don't want to say anything. They don't want to say, well, except we meet with with you, because basically this declaration will not be meaningful without its acceptance by SAF.
I would like you to comment lastly on the RSF leader, the Rapid Support Forces leader, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo Hemeti. He has been touring the region and meeting with heads of state and government. He was in Uganda, he was in Addis Ababa, he was in Djibouti, he was in Addis again, Nairobi. What is he doing and is it working?
Yeah, okay. Just before addressing this question directly, let me mention one point and then I'll come to your question. The declaration, it wasn't, the main difference between declaration and this declaration and the previous declarations is this declaration talks about unity of Sudan, citizenship, federal democratic system. So it goes beyond the security issues, beyond the military and security issues. RSF is now talking like a political force, not just only military force. They're talking like a political force, and they're talking about their vision of Sudan, unity of Sudan, citizenship, equality of citizenship, the federal democratic system. This is something new. Now, new in the sense that it didn't come in the previous declarations. Going from there and looking at Hemeti going around, I mean, it's really amazing how he's being treated in those countries that he's being treated as a head of state. What I saw in Kenya reminded me of the welcoming of Obama when he visited Kenya. It's the same thing.
It was a big spectacle indeed.
Big spectacle. I mean, you just cannot underestimate it in any way. It's a huge spectacle. And I think that really sends a signal that the guy is getting now treated as a head of state.
Indeed, very, very interesting developments.
It's a major development. It's extremely interesting development.
We will, of course, monitor the space. We see the reaction from the army, head of the army, Burhan, and the highly anticipated face-to-face meeting with Hemeti. I will definitely talk again soon. Thank you very much for your insights.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Nabil.
That was Salman Mohamed Salman, president of the University of Khartoum Council and an RSF expert, speaking with VOA's Nabil Biaju. The African Union today joined the United States and the European Union in appealing for calm in the Horn of Africa as regional tensions have soared over a contested deal between Ethiopia and the breakaway region of Somaliland. Somalia has vowed to defend its territory after Monday's agreement. Mogadishu describes it as an aggression and a blatant assault on its sovereignty by neighboring Ethiopia. Somaliland declared independence from Somalia 3 decades ago, but the Mogadishu government considers it part of Somalia. Somaliland is not recognized internationally as a separate country. The Memorandum of Understanding gives landlocked Ethiopia access to the Red Sea through Somaliland. The French news agency AFP says a statement issued by the AU Commission chair calls for calm and mutual respect to de-escalate the simmering tension between Ethiopia and Somalia. It also calls on the two nations to engage in a negotiation process without delay to settle their differences. You are listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Tunisian authorities have arrested Al Jazeera reporter, the network's bureau chief says. This as activists voice concern over a growing number of journalists behind bars in the North African country. The Tunis Bureau of the Qatar-based television network says Samir Sassi was arrested by security forces at his house late yesterday. His wife and children were taken also, as were his computer and phone. According to the French news agency AFP, police did not disclose the reasons for the arrest nor where Sassi is being held. There was no official comment from Tunisian authorities. Al Jazeera's Tunisia bureau has been closed since President Kais Saied seized full control of the government in July 2021, but the network's journalists remained accredited and maintained their coverage in Tunisia.
Candidates will have to wait a little longer to find out their fate following the December 20th elections. The Electoral Commission says it is continuing to...
Initially scheduled for January 3, the announcement of the provisional results of national, provincial and municipal legislative elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo has been postponed indefinitely by the Electoral Commission or CNE. It's a decision heavily criticized by civil society at a time when candidate Moise Katumbi, who finished second in the race, is calling for protests against what he describes as electoral fraud. More with Zanem Neti Zaidi. Meanwhile, leaders of Cameroon's main opposition party say they are negotiating with other 30 opposition leaders to present a single candidate in the next election should 91-year-old President Paul Biya be incapacitated by ill health. The opposition reacted after Biya, who has ruled for over four decades, made no mention of running for re-election in a New Year's message. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Maurice Kamto, president of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party, says scores of civil society and political opposition members have set up a platform called the Political Alliance for Change, or the PAC, to press for aging President Paul Biya to relinquish power. The 91-year-old Biya has been president since 1982 and is the world's oldest political head of state. Presidential elections are to take place in Cameroon by October 2025, but civil society groups and opposition parties expected Biya in his New Year's message to announce early elections in 2024. That didn't happen. Kamto says he has been chosen by the PAC as a single opposition candidate should Biya resign or is incapacitated. He says supporters of Biya's CPDM party, who are fed up with Biya's autocratic rule, should join the PAC.
The PAC remains open to all those who believe that the current regime is now Cameroon's problem and therefore can no longer contribute anything to its recovery. Our compatriots in the ruling CPDM party, who demonstrate a patriotic awakening, are also welcome in the PAC. Let them come and take their place in the train of national renaissance.
Kamto said he would revive all state institutions he says Biya has ruined, organize an inclusive national dialogue to end the separatist crisis that has claimed more than 6,000 lives in Cameroon's western regions and improve living conditions for those stuck in hunger and poverty. According to Cameroon's constitution, if Biya dies, resigns, or becomes incapacitated, Marcel Niat Njifenji, the 89-year-old president of the Senate, the upper house of parliament, would take power and organize elections for a new president within 120 days. In his message, Biya did not say anything about plans to leave power or not, but blamed the country's current hardships and armed conflicts on high levels of corruption and external factors. Biya said Cameroon, like other African countries, is bearing a heavy burden of the economic crisis caused by the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East.
La résurgence en octobre dernier du conflit israelo-palestinien.
Biya says when the world expected an end to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the resurgence last October of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict worsened the rift within the international community and further sunk the world's economy. Biya says the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is leading to general price hikes in consumer products and, consequently, the cost of living. He says the conflict is also causing drastic shortages of petroleum products. Biya said despite the challenges, Cameroon had a 3.7% economic growth rate in 2023 and inflation was contained at less than 7%. Cameroon's opposition disputed that, saying the economic growth rate is less than 2% and inflation is running above 20%. They say Biya is responsible for what they say is an economic disaster in Cameroon, a country blessed with a variety of minerals that could be exploited to develop the Central African state, but were misused by the Biya government. The Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Central Africa says that Cameroon's fragmented opposition, which is made up of about 400 political parties, will find it difficult to beat Biya or any CPDM candidate in an election. Kamto says all the opposition and civil society groups should, for once, rally behind a single candidate should early elections be called, or when presidential elections come up by October 2025. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Initially scheduled for January 3, the announcement of the provisional results of national, provincial and municipal legislative elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo has been postponed indefinitely by the Electoral Commission or CNE. It's a decision heavily criticized by civil society at a time when candidate Moise Katumbi, who finished second in the race, is calling for protest against what he described as electoral fraud. More with Zanem Neti Zaidi.
Candidates will have to wait a little longer to find out their fate following the December 20th elections. The Electoral Commission says it is continuing to compile voters throughout the DRC, an announcement that has not gone down well with members of civil society in North Kivu, such as Lazar Muyango, who fears corruption. He says they do not agree with the Electoral Commission's decision to postpone the announcement of election results because any issue that is postponed always leads to problems. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, corruption is common plague. That is why he's calling on the Electoral Commission, CENI, to make a statement as soon as possible so that the public can find out what happened at the ballot box. The process of convening voters for the election of senators, provincial governors and vice governors has also been postponed since the announcement of the provisional results by the Electoral Commission. Opposition candidates in the presidential election have issued a series of protest statements. In an address to the Congolese people on Wednesday, January 3rd, Moise Katumbi called for legal resistance against what he described as an electoral holdup. He says that people are victims of the electoral delay of December 20th, which is another example of the usurpation of sovereignty. He says that the people are entering another phase in their quests for freedom through peaceful democratic actions. There will be scenes of resistance to regain the most legitimate right, that of defeating fraud. The many calls from the opposition for the people to rise up against Tshisekedi's victory can be explained by irregularities observed during the electoral process, as Tresor Makunya, a Congolese professor specializing in law, asserts.
In a number of polling stations, voting machines were faulty. The fact that those voting machines were faulty, the opposition thought that this was a political machination by the ruling coalition to try to rig elections. And in other districts, we realized that individuals had the voting machines. Second one, I think, is the fact that the Electoral Commission extended against what the law provides, extended the duration of votes, you know, because there were a number of problems. The third one, I think, is the low voter turnout. In a country where we had over 43 million registered voters, only less than 40% turned out. And that is really problematic.
Even if opposition protests are already taking place, the results of the presidential votes are still provisional. The final count will be revealed when the DRC's Constitutional Court validates them on January 10th. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Neti Zaidi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer David Vandy and our engineer Saida Hamdoun, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.